Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode 78. We're going to talk today about a 20-year fence. I'm Morgan Hayes, an assistant professor in biosystems and ag engineering here at the University of Kentucky, focusing on livestock facilities. In my personal life, I farm in Boyle County, Kentucky with my husband, a commercial cattle and hay operation.
And I'm Josh Jackson, assistant professor in biosystems and agriculture engineering as well, where I focus on precision livestock. And in my personal life, we raise registered Angus cattle, have some goat production, also raise some hay as well.
Okay, Josh. So we've been busy on the farm. We're coming into springtime. Lots of things happening. What's been happening on your farm?
I guess the biggest item that's happening right now is we're pretty much we're having some fence taken out, or some old fence taken out. So pretty much it's just in essence, a tree line. Clearing a tree line. I was like, I would say fence, but there was at some point, maybe 30 years ago, a fence there, but now there's just trees.
Yeah, we're doing sort of similar. We're getting ready for some projects, some fencing projects. We put up some temporary fence to hold some animals back from an area that the fence is very bad in that needs to be replaced this year, and planning some other projects. In fact, we just talked to a surveyor this morning that's coming to survey a property, so we know where the property boundaries are. So when we put in the fence line, it's in the right spot.
So I have to talk to a surveyor at some point here soon, so we know exactly where a couple corners are, but there's two or three where I'm kind of uncertain on. So having them come out there and then pretty much mark those, and we can rock and roll fencing.
Yeah, lots of fencing happening this year. I have other money we're spending on the farm this year, but fencing it'll just be an area where we have to spend some money. And, you know, yesterday I was doing a program with Bob Coleman specifically related to horse farms. Yep. And a sort of a horse sustainability project. But one of the things that we talked about was fencing at the field day. And he commented on the 20-year fence and the importance of building a product that's going to last. He was talking, I think, primarily about pressure treated posts when he made the initial comment. But I was really thinking about it, and I was like, you know, we joke all the time. We talk at the fencing schools. We have a couple Yep. coming up next week. If anyone is interested in joining, they'll be in Moorhead. I think that one's probably about full, and out in Western Kentucky.
In Graves County.
In Graves County, yeah. So
April 23rd is Moorhead, and the 25th is down in Graves County.
Yeah, so if anyone in Western Kentucky would like to join us at a fencing school, they are a great hands-on experience. But with the conversation we had yesterday, the importance of a 20-year fence, you know, I always say I'm building a fence now so that the next generation will have to build the next fence in this fence line. Like, I don't want to build a fence that I will have to rebuild in the next 10 years. That's not my goal when I go through all the time and effort to build a fence and the money, yes. to be yeah. fair. So it was kind of an interesting conversation. I thought about it some more, and I said, what are we doing in our planning for our fences right now to make sure that we're building a 20-year product?
And I think, you know, what we're thinking about is, you know, primarily it's going to be our biggest fence is going to be, from a material standpoint, the wire would be a major concern. And as you stated earlier, the posts.
Yep.
So those are your two major decisions. And then, you know, I'm not saying that the braces and everything else aren't important, but I'm just saying those are my main two concerns when I'm trying to put up a good fence. And
yeah.
we've probably switched. We had been using, and we're working on a boundary fence right now. Typically our boundary fence, we've been putting all number nine wires. So it's like number nine, class three galvanized, you know, it's heavy duty. We want something that's going to last. That's our last line of defense, essentially. But now we've shifted, and we're using the fixed knot woven wire, fixed knot high tensile.
Yeah.
And we love it.
Yeah. Well, and it's still, this is the important thing. So for anyone who's not familiar, class three galvanization is a zinc coating that is used. It is the highest level of zinc coating. There's some other coatings that actually have a little bit higher lifespan on them, but they're a zinc in combination with another metal. There's actually a mixed metal coating on them. Zinc, though, is a beautiful metal in that it is a self-healing metal.
Yep.
So what ends up happening is you have steel wire with a zinc covering on it. The zinc is non-reactive. It doesn't tend to rust. And for that reason, it's a pretty valuable coating to have on your wire. What ends up happening is you weed eat, or you have a limb fall, or something else happens, and you scratch the zinc, and it looks like it's going to fail in that location. But if you have enough zinc on that coating, it will sort of, it's sort of a fluid. It'll self-heal.
Yeah.
It'll migrate into the spots that are lacking in zinc and reprotect itself. Now, it won't do it for forever, and there's a limit on how many times it can self-heal, but there is opportunities there to prolong the life by not ending up with the rust spots that you might otherwise get. So sometimes when people will nail up or steeple up the fence onto the post, the wood post, they nail in really hard, or the hammer hits the wire, and that area where is actually where it rusts first. And with a good zinc coating, it will reprotect itself if you do accidentally hit it with a hammer. So a class 3 galvanization is the heaviest class of galvanization that we see. And actually, the samples that Dr. Bob was showing at the field day were actually class 1. And I was like, I just pointed it out. I said, when you buy it, the cost difference might not be obvious between a class 1 and a class 3. And if you don't know what you're looking for, class 1 seems like it might be better.
Yeah.
But it's not. Class 3 is really what you want to be purchasing. And usually if you look at the warranty associated with a wire material, it will be directly related to the class of galvanization. So if you want a 20-year warranty, you need a class 3 galvanization.
Yep.
If you accept the same fence for $20 less and it's class 1 galvanized, it might only have a 5 or 10-year warranty associated with it. And some of those mixed metals even go to a 30-year warranty. The challenge is those mixed metals, if you do end up getting a lot of brush landing on it and some other things, that zinc flows much better than some of the other metals are more robust. They're less likely to oxidize and have rust come through them, but they don't actually self-heal as well. So you're trading off on a 30-year material. You don't want to have a lot of damage to it. So if you're constantly weed eating a fence line or something like that, I would still probably lean towards a class 3 galvanization personally. That's not a recommendation. Everyone has to make their own decisions. But that decision on the style of galvanization or treatment on the metal,
yes,
I think is a big deal. And maybe one that we don't spend a lot of time on generally. And I was so fascinated because everyone that was there that was taking notes like immediately wrote it down like they had never heard that before. And I realize that that's a really important characteristic, but I also know that people don't always know that.
And you know, we try to really think about it ahead of time. You know, part of it's not just the wire itself, because if you replace that in 10 years, it's not just the cost of the wire, it's the labor. You know,
yeah,
we almost say what you spend in materials is probably what you're going to also spend in labor. And
yeah,
so if you do it every 10 years, and it's not an easy task when you go back through there and trying to pull out steeples and get it taken down. So it can be a very, very arduous. And so it's changed now to Calipari, but we still want the one and done solution.
Yep.
Even though Calipari's gone now.
We're having lots of changes to the basketball program here, but the one and done, I think is a good motto for fencing, even if you aren't a fan of it in college sports. It's definitely my motto when I go to fencing, once and done. So I would agree with you on that. And there's class 3 galvanization on a whole bunch of different types of wire. The high tensile steel wire also has a higher carbon ratio. It's a little bit more robust. It doesn't stretch. All of those things help it also have a longer lifespan, even if get the lifespan that we would have on an older number 9 low carbon wire.
And
I think that's worth noting as well.
And the weight difference is amazing, because if it's 9/11 or number 9 all the way, that wire, you know, it can get fairly heavy, and you're unrolling it, depending on what you have to unroll it, you know, it's still going to be a challenge to deal with and move around. So a lot of times, if we can get that high tensile, it's a lot easier to handle, and you get a much more, instead of being 330 foot, you can get 600 foot rolls and still handle.
Yep, it's exactly right. Actually, the 660 rolls are really nice. You have to go to a 12-inch spacing rather than a 6-inch spacing. So under higher pressure situations, that's not going to work as well. But having a 660 is a longer roll, less stretching, less connection points, easier to put up. And since you can run 1320 between braces on a fixed knot fence,
yep,
you can put two runs together and still tie them in the center, which is a big deal. A lot less labor involved in setting it up, but also there's less points at which it is likely to break. I know that sounds weird, but usually those connections, a lot of times on traditional woven wire fences, are areas where there's either failure or a lot of stretching that occurs right at that end.
And the other thing is, so, you know, you do have to, so a lot of guys, all the farmers, you know, all the wire you would just splice together and it take you a little bit. With this, you just use the high, fixed knot high tensile, just using crimps. In essence.
Yep, you can use crimps. Some people will use the Gripples, which also work fine. All of those are really useful options. The other thing I will say is that there's a lot of options for size spacing on the wires. A lot of, there's 4x4, there's 4x6, there's 6x6, 6x12, all different kinds, gradiated with much tighter spacing at the bottom, bigger spacings at the top, and so whatever you really need, there's a lot of different, and a lot of heights on those, on the fixed knot wire. On the smooth wire, you know, that also is, could be a 20-year fence and should be a 20-year fence. That material is also very forgiving. Now, on those, we have to look a little bit at the insulators.
Yep.
And I have actually made a bunch of fences with insulators that I don't think are going to last 20 years. I think they'll last between 10 and 15, but they're not all 20-year fences. And now I have to come to terms with the fact that at some point I will probably have to send someone out there and change out all of the
insulators
for maybe a drop pin or something like that, a different type of insulator that maybe has another lifespan on it. But if I'm putting that in halfway through the fence's life, I have to make the decision, is it worth that cost, knowing that that fence, the posts and things might not last that long.
It is a challenge. And, you know, we've had a couple where we actually had a high tensile electrified fence and we end up replacing it with just the fixed knot woven wire, just because at that location we weren't maintaining our management style didn't match, because we weren't trimming the grass as much as we needed to avoid grounding out our fence. And we also weren't, you know, just managing, you know, if something was to get off our insulator slip, we weren't taking care of that. So just on that farm, we weren't able to be there and actively manage. So we had to switch out to the other. But if you actively manage it, it can be a very, very cost-effective fence to put up on a per-foot basis.
Yeah.
And you can easily have 30-foot post spacings.
Yeah. Yeah, and less posts is a good thing from a cost standpoint. The posts, to me, are probably the most interesting thing and the hardest decision. You know, we do a lot of the fencing schools. We do a lot of talk about wood and treated wood posts. And I'm a big believer in treated wood posts and bigger treated wood posts.
Yes.
At that, you know, things that really have the potential to last for 15 to 20 years. I don't want to put a post in the ground that's not going to make it more than 5 or 10 years. We did a fence very early in our fencing careers, when my husband first bought a farm, at a time when we were not really prepared to pay for fencing. And we used 3-4 posts. And this would have been maybe 2010-ish.
Okay.
Maybe 2009, 2010. And right now they're coming to the end of their life.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's 15 years.
Yeah.
And that's a 3-4 post. And that is a realistic lifespan for a 3-4 post. The 4-5 posts we used a few years later will probably last about 20 years, between 15 and 20, although in some wet spots they might not quite get there. In some ground that's got lots of microbial activity, they might last a little bit less time than that. And then hopefully those corner and brace posts that we did out of 7/8 recently will definitely last until my kids are able to take over fencing projects. Even if I have to replace some line posts, I want my brace and corner posts to last, because that's the structure of a high tensile fence.
Yeah, and we we used to use all those big way back in the day, big cedars, big this or that, and so, but. And if we could get a hold of telephone poles.
Yep.
But we pretty much use a 7-8-inch post, 8-foot long on all of our corners and braces at this point.
Yeah. The gentleman we saw yesterday said he used 9s on his
really
on his corners and braces. Now that is ambitious, and those are hard to find. I've used a couple nines in spots where I had some rolling ground and I wanted a little extra height. And right now we're looking at a fencing project with a pretty tall fence on it, and that one might take some nine just to get the height that we want out of the ground and enough in the ground to counteract it, because the last thing I want is enough height out of the ground and not the right percentage of post in the ground that we don't actually hold those posts in the ground. if they start climbing, I know that I have a problem. If I start growing posts, I'm always concerned about that. So making sure that we get the right ones. But yeah, certainly at least an 8 on those corners and braces, and 7.5, I think, for me is sort of where I like to be on those line posts. I don't really love a 7-foot post, just because I struggle to get my wire up, and then if I want an electric wire on the top, there's no room above it to fit that wire on there. So it's a little bit of a personal preference, but I personally like a 7.5.
And we've gone a couple of different ways. So we've used sometimes we use concrete. If there's a gate there, we usually try to use concrete. Sometimes for our bigger post, if there's a gate there, we try to use some concrete in that hole. Other times, if we're down by a stream and we know it's going to be a wet area where we could see some issues, we definitely try to put concrete there, just because we know there's going to be the force of the water. There could be, it's wet ground, it may not be quite as stable at that point. So
now when you do that, because in theory, and there's pretty good data to back it up, that driving the post gives you the longest life on that post. I agree with you. I actually use concrete as a collar at the base.
Yes.
And then
properly
tamp dirt above it. And I do see value in doing that in some scenarios where there's going to be some pressures that aren't just the pull of the fence with the brace wire there, where there's pressures perpendicular to the tension that you're building the fence for. I kind of agree with you. I think there's maybe some value in, or there's going to be a gate hung and people are going to leave it open. I can see value in all of those things, and I can see why you might want that. So I kind of agree with you on that. But for anyone who's listening, the data is pretty clear that driving a post is actually the structurally sound way to build a fence if you have the option and you're not in rock. Josh and I are both in rock a lot when we build a fence. So a lot of times we're already digging the hole anyway. So then we have to make that decision. And then concrete is a practical thing to really get a good anchor. But what I will say is you do not want to run concrete right up to the ground surface, because they rot off at that concrete all the time. What ends up happening is water and dirt and all sorts of microbials and little organic matters all land up against that concrete post connection point, and the moisture sits there and it just really eats away at that post, and they rot off. It's very obvious they rot off right at the concrete very often.
Yep. And we for our posts, we put them in there, we put it in the ground fairly well, and a lot of it, sometimes if it's going to be a high traffic area as well, sometimes we have to deal with high traffic, and if it's really high traffic, we'll go ahead and put that that post in concrete, dirt on top, tamp it all down, then we'll actually put some geotextile fabric. It's going to be a high use area, because if it's going to be high use, they're going to carve out some paths, and usually it's close to that fence line. So
yeah, and then you end up eating away at the dirt that's supposed to be holding down. Exactly. That's a very good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. That we also have some posts where the cows will walk on the inside edge of the field around a corner post, and you can see even though I try to rotate so I don't have erosion, that area gets worn right there. And because that ground was already disturbed because of the post going in, it's more likely to erode than it was before even.
It's facing some additional challenges and pressure, and just erodes, and it's kind of sacrificed a little bit of that stability that you have for that post.
I think that's a fair point. Yeah, one that I hadn't really thought about either was, but yeah, putting in heavy use areas at those points is a really good option. Yeah. The one thing we haven't talked about, though, is you have other post options other than just a wood post.
That's true.
And so, for us, we're looking at some of our interior fences in particular using some steels in our fence lines, especially with that high tensile wire, proper brace posts, corner and brace properly built, utilizing steels in between, especially in areas where the ground tends to be pretty soft or wet anyway. Or if I know I'm in an area that has really heavy rock,
okay,
I can use some steel posts to run through that area to keep everything structurally sound, to give me the visual barrier that I need so that the animals know that there's a fence there. And I can put a lot of steels in. I can put significant number. I can probably put 2 steels to every 1 wood post that was going to go in. Cost-wise, maybe even 2.5, depending on how I'm buying them.
Yeah.
Or if I choose the pile that I've pulled out of other spots on the farm, they're a lot cheaper than that if I don't count my labor for any money.
When you rob Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, I rob Peter to pay Paul, exactly. Well, I got to pull out all those old fences that don't exist, but there's still random steel posts around there. Sometimes I can reuse them. Yeah. Sometimes they're bent like in a C shape. But
you can get it, like, at some point, it just takes more effort to get in the ground.
That's right. So I don't know. I steel posts do have a pretty good lifespan. There is like a good 15-year on a painted T-post. I think there's pretty good data that shows 15 years is a pretty safe assumption.
Yeah.
I don't know that you're going to get a full 20 years out of them. But also those are pretty easy to replace in a fence line if you had to before the fence came down. But that's just something to keep in mind, that there's a good lifespan on them, but it's definitely not like a 30-year post. It's got a lifespan that might end before the fence does.
It's a sacrifice we have to make. And we actually have gone a little bit the other way. We're putting we got wood posts, so 5-6 inch wood posts that we're putting in. And our strategy has just been, whenever we drive those wood posts, seems like we rent the driver. We can drive that probably just as fast and put a T-post in.
Mm. And then, I think you can put it in as fast, as long as you don't hit rock.
As long as we don't hit, if we hit rock, we kind of, we'll go forward a foot, back a foot, then we'll say rock on.
Yeah.
With our driving, pretty much drive all we can, then come back, and if we have to, that'll get a rock auger.
Yep.
And then we'll also, I like the wood post because I think we can put up the wire quicker. Because we now have a steeple driver. So I have an electronic steeple driver. And so pretty much a battery powered steeple driver. And so we can just walk through and fairly quickly put up a fence.
True. Those are much faster. The wraparounds that you would have to use on the T-post would be significantly more money. So
those are... similar to wire, you can get class 3 galvanized, double barbed.
Yep.
Steeples.
Yeah, and there's no reason if you're going to spend the money on the wire and the post that you wouldn't spend the money on the steeples.
Yes.
Or staples, whatever you want to call it. But either way, because that is something that I think a lot of people will cheap out on, but like, there's no reason to. They're not that different in price, and there's no reason. The galvanization that's one of the spots where it has to heal, is where you hammer and then attach it, and then it's indenting on the other wire. So that zinc needs to be class 3 all the way through there. There's no reason not to do that.
And we typically use about 1.5 inch steeple. So the traditional double barb steeples, they seem to hold a lot better. But, these being, with the electronic or the battery powered DeWalt, it seems to go a lot faster, faster. The staples will cost about twice as much as a regular single individual steeple, but we can just go so much faster with it, and we're having to worry about hammering the stuff in.
Oh, sure.
And we're not overpowering. With the battery power, we're not overpowering. We're not driving that staple all the way in there.
Yeah, you can get to the right depth so you don't overly crush or not get it in all the way or bend it over halfway through or do any of the other number of things that I do when I hammer it by hand. So... that's also a good point, yeah.
So we've gotten to the point where for us, from a labor standpoint, we're doing a lot of it ourselves. We just want to have something that's going to be a little easier, because it used to be the, 5 people out there, the whole family, and now it's down to just 2 primarily. Yeah.
And it's probably a lot less stressful for the 2 and the rest of the family. That's a good point, yeah. I don't think I have any other thoughts on... components of the fence necessarily.
I do love, this is my personal opinion, but I do love the little T ripples that you can get, the T's that you have at the very end where you can attach that loose wire around your post and grip it onto your, I think they call it the T ripple.
Yep, that's exactly what they call it.
And so you can just use that. It's so quick and easy to attach to, wrap it around your end post. It makes it a lot much more streamlined. And you don't have to have it, but it's nice. Like I said, we have two people. We've spent the extra money on those just so we can go a lot quicker.
Yeah, we've used them too. I'm happy with them. I don't mind sometimes wrapping the wire, but the hand tying each wire is a little bit of a pain on a fixed knot fence, especially if you have a lot of horizontal strands, because at the top it's not so bad, but at the bottom where they get tighter together, it's harder to wrap around that wire to make that knot properly. And otherwise what people do is they just wrap it, and that likely will hold, but it is not actually the correct way to tie the wire. There is a specific way to tie a fixed knot fence to create tension on an end.
And I just went with the T just because we can save time. You know, at some point it's about time, and I don't want to spend all my time fencing, so.
Yep, I would agree with you. We do too. We do the same thing, and there's time and energy and frustrations all being saved by using some of the products that have come out on the market that have warranties that will last, that aren't going to shorten the life of your fence. And I think that's the key, is I want to spend less time and energy, but I don't want to cut corners that are going to make the fence longevity really be cut.
Yeah.
So, okay. With all that said, what's happening on your farms in the next week?
The next week, we're probably going to move a couple of groups of cows. So they're really, we have them out on pasture. And so we've pretty much, our home farm or our fall herd was, we've pretty much fed all that hay.
Okay.
And so now we're pretty much getting them out on pasture and, you know, rotating through fields. And so there was a field I thought, oh yeah, they're going to be out here for 2 weeks in this section, 2 weeks in that section. Well, after looking at it, it's probably about a week in each one.
Okay.
So they've really hit it hard. And they, you know, I walked out there amongst them and they were starting to, I had about 40 shadows.
There you go. So you knew it was almost time to move them again.
So I know, so I was like, I know there's like, eat the rest of it and knock it all the way down, then we'll come back and give it some love and fertilizer. But so that's one thing, just keeping cows rotated. Probably rotate some our fall calves, get them on some good grass. They've been kind of neglected to some degree, just with the hay supplies. They've been on hay, so I want to get them on grass as well. So then making sure everybody's got mineral, making sure everything's, and then pretty much thinking about, you know, when we get our posts, are we getting it by a couple from here and there at farm stores, or are we just going to go ahead and just get a semi-load?
Yeah, that's a great question. A little bit, you want to know what the quality is. So if you can get a local supplier who has good quality posts, then you buy them. If not, you find a larger supply, but you know where it comes from and you're confident that they're well pressure treated and properly cured out before they got treated, and all of that will be a big difference. We are almost done with calving. We have one group that is still on hay that will go out probably this weekend onto grass. That'll be the last group to make it onto grass. The other two big groups went out earlier this week.
Okay.
So everyone will be on grass by this weekend. That's always a good thing in some ways. That takes labor away in terms of feeding hay. On the other hand, it makes checking a little bit longer. We still have about 10 cows to calve out of 48. So we were cranking along, and now we've had like a little bit of a lull. I expect that we'll see a few more here in the next week or two, though. So,
all right.
Other than that, we've still got just general maintenance on the farm, just getting things prepped for projects this summer and hay season, getting ready to come.
Any manure spreading? Or is that...
No, we're going to hold off on manure spreading. Okay. We're trying to see what our pastures are doing to figure out where we need to put manure. I have a pretty good idea where I think it needs to go this year, but I want to just see how the pastures respond to the first and second grazes before we put any on, making sure we put the P and K where we need it. There will be a little bit of nitrogen boost with it, but really want to get the P and K on the right fields.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so that'll be our plan for the next few weeks. So,
all right. I just want to reiterate the fencing schools. We're going to be Moorhead the 25th of April, or 23rd of April, and then Graves County the 25th of April.
Yep. And everyone have a good weekend, and we will have another podcast next week.
Take care.
Have You Heard is a production of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, along with the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. That's wildly possible at ca.uky.edu.